Now, more of That Is Good to Know. Continuing with today's program, here's Jeff Stanislow.
Hey, Tampa Bay. This is Jeff Stanislow, your host of That Is Good to Know. And we are doing our second segment here at That Is Good to Know, talking about watches and the marketplace for watches with our special guest, Jack Stanislow, who, yes, that is my son, has been into watches since he has been almost, beginning of high school, has done a lot in it and done a lot of research and can hold his weight in regards to conversations with other watch collectors and watch buffs and has participated in, doing some posts and some blogs and comments and things like that. And thanks again for joining us for part two, Jack.
Hey, Dad, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me come along for another. Just looking forward to it.
Yeah, wonderful. So, Jack, we talked a lot about the Holy Trinity of watches. And before we get started on that again, I'll have you, recap the listeners' memory on that. But we also talked about, Swiss watches versus quartz watches. And we talked about, wearable watches, or these digital watches that are in the marketplace now, and how they differentiate. They're more of, an extension of applications and technology. And then, not necessarily are they what we consider throwaway watches, but over time, the technology is going to increase and they're going to have to update their the hardware, the watch themselves, so they can, just like you would do your computer, your iPad, they have new releases that come out and they need faster operating systems to operate those. So again, Jack, we had a lot of great information on That Is Good to Know. Visit our website, thatisgoodtoknow.com, to listen to, I think we've done over 30 weeks of content on thatisgoodtoknow.com. That's available for you. And thanks again to our host, AM 1040 Tampa Bay, which you can listen to our show at 8 a.m. on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays. So, Jack, what is the Holy Trinity of watches?
Yeah, here's a little recap. The Holy Trinity of watches are all based in Switzerland, and they are Tech Philippe, Vacheron Constantin, and Audemars Piguet.
Okay, Jack. Now, one of the ones that I think we didn't cover very much is probably the most popular brand, and it's not considered one of the Holy Trinity, and that's the brand of Rolex. Why is that not one of the ones that are, the Trinity of watches, if it's the biggest in the marketplace? I think it's got to be what I think you mentioned in conversation earlier, that it's close to 75% of the market in that, mid to higher end luxury watch.
Yeah. So, the Holy Trinity, three of those watch manufacturers we just talked about, Patek, Vacheron, and Audemars, they do make wonderful timepieces, and that's no secret. I think one thing that's really interesting about the watch industry is holos, just how horizontally and vertically the industry as a whole is. There are so many different key players about the industry, so many different niches, brands, are great for ultra-luxury, while others are really tool watches out there, utilitarian by nature. They're designed to be as robust, accurate, and reliable as possible in the most adverse conditions known to man. And I think one thing that's very interesting is, as you mentioned, Rolex is not considered to be one of the big three, but if I went out on the street here in sunny Tampa, Florida, and 100 people, I would reckon about 95 of them would say, watch brand. They'll say Rolex, right? And Rolex has a great brand recognition and a lot of brand power. But the reason they're not a Holy Trinity piece is because Rolexes are by nature more utilitarian and more plastic. At its core, Wolsdorf, the founder of Rolex, he wanted to create an everyday watch for the everyday man, that was really capable in every reasonable situation. He created watches for professionals, and that's what Rolex built their brand on, building a quality product at an approachable price point that was very well made and very kind of tool-tastic by nature. And even to this day, while Rolex has seen itself as a key player in the luxury space, many of their timepieces can actually be had at reasonable prices, and the quality and craftsmanship of their watches really are near the top, I think. You know, not in terms of aesthetics or craftsmanship art, but as far as watches go, they're incredibly reliable, incredibly well made, and very desirable in general.
Yeah, so how about just like the volume of watches that are made? Like, you know, I would imagine Rolex makes a lot of watches. Do you think it's because the Holy Trinity, like the Pateks and of the world, or Vacherons, they just don't make as many watches? Is that part of the criteria?
That's true. Yeah, both all members of the Holy Trinity have relatively limited production figures. You know, I would reckon Rolex probably makes more watches in a month than the Holy Trinity do combined in a year. And the reason for that, is to match the exclusivity of the product, right? So these Holy Trinity watches, part of the reason for the allure around them is because they are not as common, scarcity involved with them. And Rolex, interestingly enough, for having such a large production capability, there's scarcity around particular Rolex models as well. You know, what kind of come to mind there are the Daytonas, and then some of the special pieces that they created over the years that are just extremely desirable. But, you know, one thing that's very interesting about the Swiss watch industry as a whole is it's relatively secretive on the financial performance of the industry because most of it's privately held. You know, we don't have, financial statements that have been, kind of recorded for a lot of these major players because they're for the most part privately held. And so not too much is known really about the actual economic impact of the watch industry. But 2023, the Rolex estimated sales was in excess of $10 billion estimated. Okay. Could be much higher. We're really not sure. That accounts for roughly 30-40% of the market.
All right, Jack, we've talked about the business. This is Jeff Stanislaw, your host of That Is Good to Know. Thanks for joining us here on AM Tampa Bay 1040. Hopefully you're enjoying our shows. As I mentioned, we've done 30 plus weeks of them now. We're talking with Jack Stanislaw, who is, I wouldn't say an expert in watches, but can definitely hold his own in conversation and knows values and, you know, the marketplace and a lot about them. But Jack, let's have some fun with some watches now. Tell us a little bit about some of the famous watches that, you know, might be out there and their values and, you know, kind of what makes them so value. And let's talk about some celebrity watches and what people are wearing.
Yeah, that's a really fun topic. And I'm glad you brought that up. I think that there are many different makes and models of watches that have kind of captured the attention of people throughout the world. Whether it's in cinema, there's some watches that are very prominently featured in certain films, or it's just kind of these red carpet events where many celebrities are adorned with some beautiful timepieces, and it kind of catches your eye, and it's pretty fun. And then there's some of these watches that are just very timeless and classic, and they're very popular, and they kind of garnered a status in their own right just because of their popularity. You know, I think probably the most well-known watch in the world, even if you're not big into watches, you'll recognize it, is the Rolex Submariner. It's just a very simple watch. I would reckon that pretty much any any dive watch used after 1950s draw some type of inspiration from the Submariner. It's just, it's a beautiful watch, and it's worn by everyone from corporate executives to blue collar workers to professionals and Navy SEALs and such. It's a really special timepiece.
How about the famous Daytona? Talk to us a little bit about that, and how much is that worth?
Absolutely, yeah. So the watch that you're referring to is known as the Rolex Paul Newman Daytona. It's very famous, obviously, for its association with the late, the great Hollywooder Paul Newman. And this watch is one of the most expensive watches ever sold at auction, and it is the most expensive Rolex sold at auction today. It went at Phillips Auction House in 2016 for roughly $18 million. $17.75 million at the top of my head.
Wow.
Just an absolutely massive sum of money.
What now is it, I would imagine it's the combination of the specific watch, the Daytona, which is a popular watch, but then it's also Paul Newman's. So it's like, I guess it's anything like, you know, a Babe Ruth autographed baseball can be, you know, depending on the autograph, can be, you know, tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to even $1 million because it's Babe Ruth. So the same effect happens with when these watch manufacturers get a celebrity to wear their watch, it increases the value. And so a lot of different factors go into it. And I would imagine there's some other watches that are pretty famous. I think there's a Speedmaster that you had mentioned. There's one that's even missing that nobody can even barely put a price tag on it. So
absolutely. And you're right. There are some pieces that are probably unpriceable. You know, I think on the Paul Newman's Daytona, you know, this watch was actually owned by Paul Newman. It was his personal watch. You can see him in many magazine photos from when he was an actor to on the silver screen. That's part of the reason why this watch went for such a large sum of money. But there's other watches out there too that you know, are probably quite similar to rarity and value. And, you know, I think, as we discussed off the air, the Omega Speedmaster that was Buzz Aldrin on the moon is probably a preeminent example of the quote unquote missing watch. And so it's a really interesting story. So the Omega Speedmaster was issued by NASA to the Apollo astronauts as the official watch to be worn by astronauts. And it had passed a rigorous test in order to earn this achievement of being qualified for manned space flight. And it was selected because of its simplicity, its ruggedness, its viability. And it's just legibility as well. It was just an excellent watch, and it made a lot of sense for the astronauts. And if you ever go to an Omega boutique, they'll let you know about the moon launch story. I promise. It's probably one of the marketing stories in marketing. But to that end, after the Apollo 11 mission, which man first stepped on the moon, Buzz Aldrin shipped his NASA-issued Speedmaster to the Smithsonian. And, you know, it was property. NASA was property of the United States government. So the astronauts, unless they were given the option to buy it out or purchase their own watch, to give it back. So Buzz Aldrin's watch, he went to send the Smithsonian, and it never got there. It never got there. We're uncertain of where the true Omega moon watch is, and contemporary estimates for the value of that watch are, you know, and it's priceless. I mean, I've heard some people quote it at $5 or $10 million, but it could very well go in excess of 30, 40, 50, depending on the.
Yeah. Jack. So, other famous watches, you got the Steve McQueen wears that Tag Heuer Monaco. You know, we talked about the Paul Newman watch, but how about James Bond? He wearing the watch as the James Bond character, is kind of, runs parallel with the films. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the James Bond franchise is quite interesting when it relates to watches. Ever since Pierce Brosnan came and took over the role. Omega has been adorned by Agent 007 ever since. So kind of growing up and watching Daniel Craig's Bond in particular, I remember first time seeing Casino Royale when I was growing up, and fantastic. But there's a very famous scene in the train where he's talking to his love interest Vesper, and she's like, it's a beautiful watch and Rolex. And he just subtly replies, Omega. And it's a pretty good scene. But, you know, of course, that's just kind of excellent product placement by Omega. And, you know, I do think it's a fitting watch. Omega has a long history with Britain, particularly with issuing Royal Air Force watches during World War II. So they've had a, you know, it makes sense for 007 to have a relationship with a kind of a company that is related to the British Ministry of Defense. But over the years, James has worn many pieces, including Seiko. Sean Connery is extremely famous for wearing a Rolex Submariner. I believe a reference 5513. And there's many other watches over the years.
Yeah, it's interesting how integrated some of these brands become with the shows. And you're talking, you know, James Bond and the Omega Seamaster specifically, but, you know, also in regard to, you know, the famous Aston Martin, you know, with James Bond. And I think BMW even had a little play there. These product placements become integral of the storyline and can, you know, and portray the brands together so they go well. I want to shift gears. This is Jeff Stanislaw, your host of That Is Good to Know. You're listening to our great show, and our goal is after you're done listening that you say to yourself, hey, that was good to know, because that's what we're all about here. Our website, thatisgoodtoknow.com. We're talking with Jeff Stanislaw, or Jack Stanislaw, my son, and we're talking watches. Now, I want to shift gears, Jack, a little bit about, like, you know, kind of like your favorite watches, you know, maybe an entry level watch, a mid level, and maybe even a high end watch is the one you want to talk about. And then I want to talk about maybe about collecting watches a little bit and some of the things that you should know if you're thinking about buying a timepiece, you know, to do some research, to box and papers and what have you. But let's start with the speed round. I'm going to ask you your favorite entry level watch and why.
Absolutely. Yeah. And before I get into this, I'll just go ahead and preface it by saying very quickly that, you know, watches are, they're very subjective in nature. It's very much a representative of who you are as a person. When you're out looking for a watch, I would consider factors, you know, such as your lifestyle and your budget and things of that nature, which will really help in determining which watch is best for you. But without further ado, the kind of entry level pieces I've been very impressed with, and it's very hard to narrow down to just one. But I've always been a very big fan of some of the timepieces being produced by Hamilton. Hamilton is a Swiss brand that was actually founded in the United States, and they produce some of the best watches in the world for their price point, which is roughly the $300 to $1,000 mark. Depending on if you buy new or which model you get, or if you go on eBay. But they make some, you know, absolutely incredible timepieces for the money. And they're very utilitarian by nature and typically feature mechanical movements made by a company called ETA, which makes special movements that are, you know, just very simple and reliable. But the overall craftsmanship and asset that you get from these timepieces are, I think, some of the best at any price point, really.
Great,
you know, Jack. I own a Hamilton Cafe, and it's served me well throughout the years.
All right, so Hamilton again. Remember, this is a speed round. This isn't the long story explanation. How about mid-level watch? You know, I'll give you two of them. Give me two of your favorite mid-level watches.
Okay, my two favorite mid-level watches, the first would be an Omega Speedmaster. And when we talk about mid-level watches, we're going into entry-level to mid-level luxury, which is probably about the $1,000 to about $10,000 mark, roughly. The Omega Speedmaster is going to be my top pick. You can pick up a nice example used for roughly $4,500 to $6,000, depending on the reference.
Okay, your second one?
Choice would be a probably a Rolex Datejust or a Rolex Oyster Perpetual, something of that sort. Just a nice, simple, elegant Rolex timepiece. They're reliable, well made. They hold their value quite well. And I think the sweet spot is the what are called neo vintage Rolexes, which are produced from the early 1990s up until about the mid 2000s. That's, I think, going to be your sweet spot.
Okay, now we're moving into the high end. Let's open up those wallets and tell us what your favorite two high end watches and what they would set you back.
So my personal favorite high-end watch is from a German watch manufacturer, Alang & Zona. They make some of the most beautiful timepieces on the planet. They really are a sight to behold. I've had the pleasure of seeing them in person and kind of seeing how they're serviced and worked on, and they're truly amazing. But the Longo 1 is the watch that put them on the map after German reunification in the 1990s, and that would be my top pick. You can get the entry-level Longo 1 for probably about $30,000 used. MSRP is roughly in the mid-40s. And then my second pick for a high-end watch would be a Audemars Piguet, which is one of the Holy Trinity watches we talked about, a 37-millimeter automatic mid-sized AP. I'm a big fan of the Royal Oak. It was designed by the famed designer Gerard Gentra. And it's a fantastic watch, and that will set you back anywhere between $20,000 to $30,000 MSRP as well.
All right, Jack. So you are buying one of these mid to higher end watches, and you want to save it as a collectible. They can increase in value. We know that they can last a long time. But what are your top couple recommendations for someone that might be interested in doing that? What should they do and what should they not do? We got a minute or two left.
100%. Yeah. So very quickly, if I could just make any point here, watches, yes, they can be investments, they can be stores of value, but I would not consider them to be, the go-to way of preserving wealth or making investments. Yes, they hold their value, but they're typically not income producing, and they can be quite risky if you're not sure what you're doing. So if you're going to get into watches, I would make sure you really do your research and understand the market before. It's just like Warren Buffett says, don't buy anything unless you understand it. But if not, the casual collector, enjoy it. These are amazing watches. And just enjoy the process of seeing what's out there and seeing what you like, and your tastes will change and your preferences will change. And that's pretty exciting because you can kind of buy, sell, trade these and switch it up as you deem fit. But typically speaking, buy what you want, buy what makes you happy. And the brands that tend to be the safest are the ones that are most recognizable, such as the Holy Trinity brands,
Rolex, how about Box Omega, and Papers, Jack? What's the importance of Box and Papers? We got about 30 seconds. I wanted to make sure our audience knew that.
Yeah, so whenever you're buying a watch, whenever you buy it new, it comes with a receipt, it comes with a box, and it comes with papers verifying its authenticity. As watches are traded on the secondary market, sometimes they lose some of these artifacts, right? And essentially...
That's important to know, right? It's important to know. It's important 100%. To keep them because it could be like 30% of the value of the watch. Jack Stanislow, thanks for joining me. This is your host, Jeff Stanislow, and you've listened to another episode of That Is Good to Know. Take care, Tampa.